Age is just a number, but it does make you feel old. You'll have to drag me out of the booth and pry the microphone out of my cold, dead hand.
Welcome in to Heart of the Game, the new podcast series from WorldSoccerTalk.com. I'm your host, Nate Abaurea. Follow me on Twitter, at Nate Abaurea, and you can follow WorldSoccerTalk.com on Twitter, at WorldSoccerTalk. What we want to do with this show is share conversations with the folks who make up the fabric of football. Former players, current players, coaches, supporters, writers, and most certainly broadcasters. And with us here on episode one of this show is a man who's been calling soccer matches on American television for the better part of three decades, our good friend Christian Miles. And in addition to breaking down the pros and cons of the current soccer broadcasting landscape and waxing nostalgic on the glory days of Fox Sports World, we also talked about Christian's love for Arsenal Football Club and Fiorentina, as well as Christian's current work, calling LA Galaxy matches, and his expectations for 2020, aka the year of Chicharito. Now, without further ado, on with the show. Christian Miles, how you doing, sir?
Nate, how are you? Long time, my friend. How's it going?
I'm doing good. It's been a while, but we are back together on the microphones here, Heart of the Game in conjunction with WorldSoccerTalk.com. So many people who are fans of World Soccer Talk, so many people who are fans of the Premier League, and really a certain significant and important demographic of soccer fans in America, they know you. They know your name alongside names like the indomitable Maximiliano Bretos and London Miyagi himself, Nick Webster, and a few other select individuals who back in the late 90s very much were the only option when it came to English language coverage of the beautiful game with a world view. When you hear what I'm just laying out right now, what goes through your mind, Christian Miles, when you think back to Fox Sports World and all that was?
I'm old. I'm ancient. Almost fossil-like. That was a long time ago, my friend, but those were good times. Difficult times, but really enjoyable times. We all got a chance to cut our teeth at a time when soccer broadcasting was cutting its teeth here in the States. So it was a lot of time of learning, and you know, some great friendships came out of it and relationships. So, you know, I look back on it positively and in a lot of fond memories.
Now, I spoke with the aforementioned Max Bretos recently. He had a similar reaction, saying, "Hey, Nate, don't age me. Don't age me. Come on now. We're still working." Max likes to remind me that he is still very much an active sports broadcaster, and you are still an active sports broadcaster as well. What's new for Christian Miles here in 2020, as you are still very much a young and able wordsmith of the microphone, sir?
Well, I will take that with a grain of salt, but yes, I'm still here. You can't make me go away, much to some of the listener and viewer chagrin, I'm sure, but I love the game. I'm currently do a broadcasting work on the radio side with the Los Angeles Galaxy, and been doing that for about the last five seasons now, and continue to fill in on an as needed basis with Fox at FS1 and FS2 on various leagues and such, the Bundesliga and the odd FIFA tournament here and there. And I also freelance here in the Southern California area, meaning I work for a variety of broadcasters in the local area, as well as Pac-12 networks covering the college soccer game, as well as some USL as well, and some other sports, including basketball and others. So enough to keep me busy, and enough to keep me out of my wife and my two small children's hair for a while.
Now, as the game of soccer has grown exponentially in this country since those Fox Sports World days that we talk about that I very much came of age with, that many of the broadcasters themselves came of age with. Again, those conversations with Nick, with Max, with yourself, and with a few other very, very special individuals over the years who talk about growing up with that network and growing up with working with that network. And so I have to ask you now, as you're a more experienced veteran of the broadcasting industry, as the game has grown and as soccer broadcasting has grown with it, is it actually easier to find work these days, or about the same, or is it perhaps even harder to find work these days in terms of specifically soccer in America?
You know, I think it's circumstantial and based on an individual basis, kind of case by case. There are more outlets, and with evolving technology and as the sport has grown, they've kind of been symbiotic. You know, technological growth has been reflected in the growth of the game, and it's kind of benefited each. But it's also led to it being spread out over a wide variety of outlets, and it's available at, you know, many different formats, such as on the phone, apps, and other broadcasters as well. Back in the day when Fox Sports World, as you were mentioning, we were kind of the consolidated place where you would go to watch soccer. So if you were an international fan, you knew if you went to Fox Sports World, you were going to get the German Bundesliga, the Italian Serie A, even the Scottish Premier League, and all the great other European leagues, as well as South America and some major league soccer. But now it's fragmented across a variety of broadcasters. So it can make things more difficult, but it's kind of a reflection of sports programming in general. I mean, you know, with choice leads more fragmentation, more opportunities to work for different outlets and such. So it's been good, it's been bad, but I think overall it's the way things are, like it or not. And the sport continues to grow amidst the changing landscape of technology. And I think it's largely been to the sport's benefit.
Now, that's definitely something that WorldSoccerTalk.com has covered in depth, the evolution of streaming and what that's done to people wanting to watch the game, wanting to be a part of the game, and what that's done for broadcasters of the game. And I guess it's kind of a part two to what I was asking you about there a second ago. How have you felt about the evolution of streaming in international soccer, and how is that related to what you do and your ability to work as a broadcaster?
Well, streaming has been great because it brings more accessibility and more eyeballs, more soccer to the viewing audience, if you will. But it does lead to the fact that there's uncertainty with this evolving technology because it's so new in streaming that there isn't the high amount of resources devoted to the production and broadcast of some of these games. Sure, at the higher levels of the English Premier Leagues, as well as, you know, even the Bundesliga and some of the ESPN Plus properties, yes, the production value is there. But when you start going into some of the other streams on a local level here in the States, some coming from Central and South America, and then the lower tier European leagues, you know, there is a dip in production quality and broadcast quality, whether it be in the level and the competency of announcers, the production, the producers as a whole, technical aspects. So it's good and bad, but I think overall, you know, more soccer is better for anybody who likes the game. So is this effect on me? Is it allowed for more growth into different areas and to learn more about this technology and how it interacts with the game? But it's also not the same as before, where yes, there are more jobs, but not necessarily as lucrative as the old television days. And I think that's indicative of television across a broad spectrum. You know, talk to anybody that worked in TV, you know, up until the mid-2000s, and salaries and budgets were a lot higher because, you know, viewing numbers were higher. There was larger demand because there was less technology in other venues for viewers or listeners to watch or listen to the game. So now that that's become diluted a bit, resources go down. And so it's not quite the big fat checks of the old days for a lot of the broadcasters. So not that we were, you know, minting our own paychecks over at Fox Sports World. I can tell you that was not the case as we were operating very, very much a shoestring would be stretching it. So yeah, that's been the change. It's a lot of more resources, but people are scaling down the level of productions, and so that's reflected in a lot of the quality.
The juxtaposition between those days, those late 90s, early 2000s days that you talk about, and now, there's so many different ways that we could look at it. One really interesting point, I think, within soccer broadcasting is just that age-old toss-up of the canned call from the studio versus live and in the flesh, and you're at the ground, you're feeling everything versus calling in the studio. Now, a lot of people like to really go hard in on the negative aspects of calling games from the studio. Oh, you're missing so much emotion. The announcer's disconnected. I always like to throw out the devil's advocate point, which is that those Fox Sports World days, the way that you guys were doing calls from the studio was like no other. That was in a world of its own. And the stories from Max, Nick, yourself about calling 8 games in a day and getting in at 3:30 in the morning into that lot on the Fox lot there in LA. That was some beautiful stuff. There are times now where you feel like broadcasters would be so much more capable of being in the ground, where it almost feels like we're reverting. We're going back to a lot of canned studio broadcasting. What are your thoughts on that, how that's evolved, and maybe perhaps how it has kind of regressed over the last few years?
Yeah, it's led to, because there's so much uncertainty in broadcasting and traditional over-the-air TV numbers are down, and with this evolving technology, there's a lot of uncertainty, which leads to people not wanting to devote the resources to things. So it has led to a little bit of a dilution in the quality of these broadcasts. But I think that it has also led to more availability of these broadcasts. And the effect that it has is, for instance, if a broadcasting company has the rights to a certain league, they don't want to travel people. And because of technology, they can scale down their crews and not only throw the announcers in a booth, but also scale down these crews where it would take, you know, 20 of us to broadcast a game in a control room and all the supporting behind the scenes staff. Now that's, you know, it's been vastly scaled down. So yes, it has allowed for more accessibility and more of a wide breadth of viewership, but the quality goes down. So for me, it's we're the anomaly here at Fox Sports World, because if you talk to any up-and-coming broadcaster, they were on the grounds and they learned firsthand being on the grounds, and they had that advantage of seeing things that the TV camera couldn't see. Well, we didn't have that there. We were just given what the viewer would see over across the screen, so that forced us to learn that way. And so in our regard, for a small set like Max and Nick and myself and anybody else affiliated with such broadcasting entities like Fox Sports World, it doesn't have much of an effect on us, because that's all we knew and that's what we learned. And unfortunately, you know, it grew in scale, it grew in quality, and ESPN became more actively involved, and Fox upped its budget and everything. But now, with the advent of all this evolving new technology, it has seen a regression back to the mean. And people, for instance, would rather have you in a booth, because it saves them from traveling you halfway across the country. And I, you know, it's interesting. It depends on who you talk to. Largely, I'm sure yourself and Chris and a lot of the discerning viewers on World Soccer Talk would know the difference between listening to a commentator who was in a booth as opposed to one on site. But I'd be very surprised if you told me that a lot of average viewers could know the difference if the broadcaster was actually on site or not. So in the end, I think it, you know, money trumps all. And if the resources are, you know, at a premium and a bit at risk, shall we say, or not to the level that the broadcasters are willing to spend, then that will prevail, and they will do it on the most economic, cost-effective basis as possible.
Well, you brought up something really interesting there, and that is the catering to the common fan, and that for most people tuning in, the average watcher of a soccer game on TV or on a streaming site, they're not going to probably be able to immediately go, hey, that guy's in a canned booth somewhere, that guy's in a studio somewhere, oh, that guy's live at the ground. We'll be able to do that because we've been around this stuff for a long time, and a lot of diehard soccer fans will be able to do that because they've watched so many games. But for average listeners and viewers, that's not the case. And I wonder how much the evolution of the game in terms of the growth of the game here in the United States in particular, and the reaching out to the common fan, the common sports fan, how has that impacted this discussion? Maybe could you expand on that a little bit, the catering to the common sports fan in America? What does that have to do with what we're talking about right now?
Well, the technology, because it's really expensive for a broadcaster to send a crew, a truck, and do the way they used to do it in the old days, and they even do it in for the larger sports, to justify the immense costs to produce a game. And for instance, just to get a truck out to a stadium is, you know, bare bones, is probably going to be $35,000. We're talking about the big semi trucks that you often see at a stadium, but now they can scale it down where we used to have what you used to have in a big semi truck trailer. Now you can see games, which I often do, or broadcast from literally a horse trailer, which has been converted into a control room, or often a large passenger van.
Yeah.
And they back those up, and they are often capable of things similar to what those large production trucks were capable of. Certainly not to the level that those things were, but are capable of them on a much lesser scale. And when economics come into it, a broadcaster can look at it and say, hey, I can do this for significantly less, get it up on the air. And at the margin of return in terms of profit for these and the broadcasts of these games is so small, then it's really hard to justify expanding and devoting a big budget to it. And that means sending these producers, sending these broadcasters out to the games and getting flights out and dedicating crews and traveling. So they often revert to the cheapest way possible to do it. And that means a lot of the times doing it what we call off tube, meaning in a booth and calling the game and or calling it from the studio remotely. And that's kind of taken precedence over a lot of the sports that aren't necessarily up there with the big four American sports, which tend to get a lot bigger ratings and viewer numbers and drive higher shares and revenue.
For a lot of broadcasters over the last couple of decades, you've seen people slowly flock to working in soccer, coming from the quote unquote traditional American sports and branching in to soccer with the names that I've already mentioned on this episode a few times, and going back to the famed FSW days and all my conversations with Nick Webster. We used to talk about, you know, those are pure soccer guys, just a bunch of soccer guys hanging out, soccer only, football. And there was always that kind of separation that existed, and that's what made Fox Sports World so special for so many people. It was where you went. It was our safe space, dare I say, as soccer fans in America wanting English language content of the world's game from around the world. It was our safe space. It's where we went. With all of the things that we've already discussed here, obviously, we got to work, and there might not be that same availability to just be a soccer guy, to be a football broadcaster these days. When did it really hit you that you had to branch out and harness those basketball skills and get that sideline reporter hat back on and really make sure that you were a well-rounded broadcaster to continue your career while still also working in soccer and being an ambassador for the beautiful game?
Well, you do what you got to do. I mean, you've all got mouths to feed and bills to pay, and you know, when the checks aren't coming in, and you either, you know, evolve or adapt or you fail. And so, you know, and it's such an exponential growth curve right now with all of the technology and the way it's affected everything, the way we do it, the streaming, the apps and such. And by way of me personally, with Fox going in another direction and kind of divesting itself out of club soccer, the broadcasting opportunities just are not there like they used to be with Fox in particular. You know, they do have a FIFA contract, but for instance, they've lost the Premier League, the Serie A over the years, the German Bundesliga, which will soon be going to ESPN+. So out here on the West Coast, there really isn't a lot in that network broadcast regard, especially with Fox. So I had to find a new way to make a living, and like trying to utilize my broadcasting skills and apply them to other sports, which I know from, you know, growing up here in the States, I'm a basketball fan. I always was a big basketball fan as well. And I don't believe in this. You can only be a soccer fan. It's and you can't be a fan of another sport, and you can't be a fan of basketball and be a fan of soccer or football or baseball. That to me is just it's ridiculous. Sports are for everybody, and there's you take what you like from one sport and you like some other sports. It's not a binary either or situation. And I love basketball, and I've been fortunate enough to do a lot of work here with some local coverage, nothing of the NBA caliber, but at the college game for Pac-12 networks, both men's and women's. And it's also allowed me to branch out into some other sports such as lacrosse, while also maintaining my involvement in soccer. So a wider breadth never hurt anybody. And I really think that it's also, from a broadcaster's point of view, it's been good for me to learn things from a non-soccer perspective and apply those lessons learned broadcasting other sports to soccer broadcasting, and vice versa. Apply some of those things that I've learned while in my years traditionally of coming up through broadcasting at Fox Sports and world soccer and domestic soccer to the more traditional American sports. So it's been mutually beneficial, and it's, you know, you try and grow and adapt with the times. And that's, I think, what, you know, I'm doing. I think anybody out there in this business, you're doing, we're just trying to get by and make a living. And you know, we're privileged to be doing what we're doing any day of the week. And, you know, as long as we're still on the air, then, hey, it's all good.
A wider breadth, always beneficial. I love that line, Christian. And jumping off of that, though, and kind of putting a bow on that little mini conversation there, you still work in soccer. You are still very active in the soccer community. You're a recognizable name in our American soccer broadcasting landscape, just our American soccer landscape as a whole. And as you've worn all these other hats and you've become a voice of college basketball, and you're talking about branching out into all these other things, which is great, and you're still working and you're thriving and you're doing great things, what does it mean specifically to still be a voice of soccer in 2020 after everything that you've poured in to the game in from LA to all over this country and all over North America? What does it mean that you're still a guest on a soccer show right now? You are a voice of soccer, Christian. What does that mean to you?
It's special. I mean, it doesn't really give the viewers or the listeners much credit. They still have me around. But no, soccer is my love. I love the game. I came into it late in life. I mean, I played growing up, but I stumbled into it late in life, and I absolutely love it. It's my sport by far. That it's special to me. It's what I learned when I came up in this business. But the sport to me is the perfect reflection of life. And it's the perfect metaphor for life. And it's something that, to me, I've always held dearly. And as long, I always will be a part of this game as long as it will have me. So until someone is smart enough to throw me off the air, I'm still here, and you're going to have to put up with me.
And what is the outlook 2020-wise, specifically looking at the beautiful game from, it could be from a broadcasting lens, it could be from a personal fandom lens, looking forward to the summer, the finales of domestic seasons across Europe. 2020, we're still early enough for New Year's outlooks here. What are you most looking forward to in terms of soccer in 2020, Christian?
From a professional perspective, I'm really looking forward to Major League Soccer taking off. You know, when I initially started covering Major League Soccer back in the early mid-2000s, it was almost begrudgingly. Because I'd grown up in a European-centered environment run by Europeans over at Fox Sports World, and being one of the few Americans along with Max to work on it on the broadcasting and production side. So going over to MLS, yeah, to be honest, we did have a little bit of a European snobbery factor. Oh, but I love Major League Soccer. I've grown to love it. It is our league. It is unique. I have a chance to really see it firsthand grow, and I've been so impressed with the way it's grown commercially and the quality of the play on the field and its accessibility and wide range of people that have come to love it. I love it. I'm so looking forward, especially from a Los Angeles Galaxy perspective, to see how they'll progress in this upcoming Major League Soccer year. I've always had an affinity for the Italian Serie A, and having it on ESPN Plus has been really fun to have. I can stream any game, and also being active on a social media side as well, covering some Spanish soccer over that's on BeIN Sports has been fun as well. So it's been fun covering that. I of course will always have a little bit of a dear place in my heart for Fiorentina Calcio Club in the heart of Florence, Viola, and as well as Arsenal Football Club, who one day, God willing, will get their act together.
Well, it was all those years watching Gabigol, watching Gabriel Batistuta back on Fox Sports World. I remember your voice and those men that we've already talked so much about here on the show, narrating those games, and it was such an influential part of my soccer upbringing. Love the shout out to Fiorentina. Love the Arsenal shout out. I know we've discussed that at length quite a bit. Any positivity feelings for the Arsenal right now? Anything that you're feeling in a positive fashion about the Gunners?
I feel that Arteta has given them a rudder and they are heading towards a more structured and stable environment and something that they have not had in the past, even towards the later years of Arsene Wenger, who stayed on much, much too long. But I don't have faith in this ownership model. I'm very disappointed in the Kroenke management group. And, you know, with the arrivals of the new front office, who are still in its relative infancy. I know it's been about a year since a lot of the new guard have come in. We'll see how it happens. I think there's a big test coming up this summer for Arsenal, see how they adapt, how they can grow. Are they going to make those signings? Because it just has not been good enough for the last 10 years. And I'm always the one to lament the old David Dean days and Arsene Wenger when they revolutionized things, made those signings and got those quote-unquote top caliber A-list players. Now the Arsenal has kind of devolved into signing, you know, players like Socrates and lesser caliber players. So hopefully they will return to those days and bring in those top caliber types of talents. But fortunately for them, they're not the only ones in this booth or in that kind of company. Excuse me. Manchester United are going through some of those difficulties. It's been a lot of adjustment for them. So some of these clubs having to adjust with their new realities. Arsenal hopefully will turn that corner and make a charge toward the top four.
Well, and again, we talk about juxtaposition. It is wild as we're hearkening back to those Fox Sports World days when anybody who watched the Premier League in the 90s and early 2000s, there were two teams competing for titles for a 9-10 year run, and their names were Arsenal and Manchester United. And it is quite wild thinking here almost 20 years on seeing where those clubs are at and when you compare and contrast to those olden days. Now, I love the fandom aspect of what you talk about, the slight bit of optimism that you're able to provide for the future of Arsenal. I love the shout out to Fiorentina and you spotlighting your love for that great Italian club. But tying it back to the first club that you mentioned there, and one that is still very much attached to you professionally, but also a club, a team with a spot in your heart, the Los Angeles Galaxy and your work with the Galaxy here in 2020, and whether it's on radio, television, national television's going to be coming in for a lot of games, radio streaming, whatever it may be, the name Chicharito is going to be ever present on just about every microphone imaginable in English and Spanish and probably a few more languages as well. What does that mean to you, and what are you expecting from the Chicharito narrative in 2020 with the Galaxy?
He is the perfect signing for the Los Angeles Galaxy. They've been big and long admirers of the Mexican's talent. I believe it's time for him to come here. He will get goals. He's, in my estimation, in this league, a 20-plus goal scorer for at least the next 2 to 3 years. He's what we call the proverbial fox in the box, perfectly positioned. I don't know how many commentators have characterized Chicharito going back to his first goal that he scored with Manchester United when it came off his backside. The guy is in the right place at the right time. He's a striker that's, you know, he's not going to fill the shoes of a Zlatan Ibrahimovic. He's not as good as Zlatan Ibrahimovic, and he's not the same type of player as Zlatan Ibrahimovic. He's a player that needs service to flourish. He'll need some support, but he knows how to get into the positions. He will score goals, and he'll also be a marketing coup for the LA Galaxy, which we know, like it or not, is an aspect that factors into Major League Soccer teams and their acquisition of big-time designated players. And he brings to light, will bring in Mexican fans who have been alienated throughout large segments of this MLS history, I believe. And it's nice to see that. I'm a huge fan of Liga MX as well, I was really surprised. I thought that he might be heading to Liga MX, might be heading back to Chivas, where it all began for him and Carlitos Vela. But I'm so happy that the Galaxy have found him. He's a wonderful signing. It's a great chance for him to reinvent himself, too, on a pretty big stage after struggling in the European game throughout the large majority of the last two or three seasons. So I'm expecting big things for him this year.
And it's got to be exciting for you as a broadcaster, seeing him on the pitch there in Carson. That's got to be something that gets the buzz and juices going as a man of the microphone, for sure, right?
Oh, it really does. I mean, anytime you're around a big player like that, I'm not going to make any bones about it. Anybody who knows me, I'm a huge fan of Zlatan Ibrahimovic. And I had a chance to I've covered Zlatan since he was an 18-year-old and had a chance to broadcast his debut after his transfer from Malmo to Ajax when we were covering the Dutch Eredivisie back in the late 90s, early 2000s. And I was ecstatic when Zlatan was here as a fan of his personality and his skill on the pitch. And I was very sad to see him go. But, you know, times evolve, times change. And you welcome Chicharito with open arms. And I can't give a shout out to the general manager and the behind-the-scenes staff at the LA Galaxy. Dennis Tecloza, I think, has been absolutely immense, utilizing his European and Latin American, specifically Mexican, contacts to bring in such big name players and attract a big name coach like a Guillermo Barros Esqueloto. So I think they're heading in the right direction. And so much of a club success, whether it be in Europe, whether it be in Major League Soccer, whether it be in Liga MX or down in Argentina, so much of it is business based now. And you need someone with a strong rudder at the top, who has vision, who has structure, and knows their way around the business side. And that is integral to any club's success. I believe the Galaxy have one of the best in the business here in North America, in Dennis Tecloza, and they are heading very much in the right direction.
How can folks get a hold of you? How can they follow you? And how can they listen to you call some soccer matches, Christian Miles?
Well, you just head over to LAGalaxy.com. You'll find the latest online broadcasts, as well as SiriusXM FC of LA Galaxy soccer games. I'm also on Pac-12 networks. You can reach me at Christian R. Miles on Twitter. And basically in and around the Southern California area, working on various junior college basketball, Big West basketball, wherever. Just turn on your computer. Turn on your app or turn on your laptop or your TV. I'll probably be around there somewhere.
Well, it means you're doing something right.
Well, I wish my wife said that.
Well, we'll end it on that note. And that's going to do it for the first episode of Heart of the Game. Another huge thanks to our guest, Christian Miles. Follow him on Twitter at Christian R. Miles, and be sure to follow at World Soccer Talk as well. And stay tuned for more episodes of Heart of the Game. I'm Nate Abarea. Bye for now.